Good afternoon, everyone. Hello. That was amazing lunch, right? Amazing. Amazing. Okay, we're gonna all head up here. I know we're all running a little bit late, but we're gonna have some time. Sit on my mic. Okay. Thank you, ladies.
All right.
Welcome, everyone, to Financial Security, Why You Need to Own It, and you do. You know, we do as women, and of course, you probably heard this all day, you know, we do have specific challenges. We heard Michelle Obama and Shonda talk about some of those challenges. We're going to talk about that when it comes to money. It tends to be a difficult topic, too. I don't know how much you find yourselves talking about money with your family and your friends. You know, I've been covering the topic for 20 years, and I have to say that it's still a very hard topic for a lot of women to talk about. So we're going to do just that. So let me introduce our fabulous panelists who are here with us today. The beautiful, wonderful Renee Seiler. Renee, she was the anchor of CBS's The Early Show, where she conducted high-profile interviews with First Lady Laura Bush, Senator John McCain, and many others. She's created a leading community for moms. You've got to follow her on social media. It's beautiful and amazing. It's about understanding the challenges of motherhood. Good Enough Mother. GoodEnoughMother.com. You can go there and follow her all over the place. And through her book, Good Enough Mother, The Perfectly Imperfect Book of Parenting. And Renee has also made it her mission to help educate and eradicate breast cancer based on her own life experiences. Can we welcome Renee today? And the fabulous Joey Fortman. She's fabulous, trust me. 20-year on-air radio TV. They called you a vet. I'm like, no, we're not vets. Veterans of television still do it. But she left the radio business in 2008 to bring her motherhood story life online. And she, as she recovered from postpartum depression, Joey founded Reality Moms to give women a real place to be themselves and share stories of motherhood through all walks of life. Joey has taken her voice to Good Morning America, The Today Show, Dr. Oz, Dr. Phil, Fox and Friends, among others. Welcome, Joey.
Thank you.
And Maddie Brooks, the wonderful Maddie Brooks. We've had a lot of fun today already. She's been with the Prudential Insurance Company of America since 2012, and she started as a financial professional who provides assistance on a range of financial issues, from evaluating insurance needs to helping clients grow their assets. And her insight and expertise on financial concerns have been featured in Black Enterprise, Managing Your Wealth, and The Root Live TV. Hello, Maddie.
Hello. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, and then there's me. So I'm Carmen Rita Wong. Some of you may remember me years ago as the host and co-creator of CNBC's On the Money. Also, all the morning shows. You probably saw me for 8 years, The Today Show, CBS. And as a columnist in Good Housekeeping, Glamour, Latina, et cetera, et cetera. But I was also a professor, faculty professor of behavioral economics at NYU, which was interesting. And I have a novel series which has come out, Never Too Real, basically based off lives of women like us. So you should check it out. So let's get things started here. And we want to encourage some real-time interactive participation from you to make that happen. You know, usually they say put your cells away. Okay, don't turn your cell on, but take it out. And text the number. If you text the number 22333, do we have a slide for that? Do we? Who's our slide person? There we go. Okay, 22333, text Prudential, M as in mom, C as in Carmen, M, mom, MCM, Prudential MCM. Now, you're going to receive a message saying that you have now joined the session. Throughout this session, we're going to ask you questions, and you can use your phone to deliver the answers, and then we're going to see them, compile them here in live time, and the bar charts will automatically update with your responses. So here's one just to test here. Now, what does owning your financial future mean to you? Does that mean A, earning your target income? B, being debt-free, C, being on track with your retirement finances and plans, D, having the ideal amount of savings to cover big ticket items and big purchases and emergencies. Or E, other. Oh, wow.
Who said all of the above?
Put E, and I'll count you as all of the above, all right? Just put E.
That's really cool.
Put E. Great. Well, this is interesting.
All right,
keep responding, because, wow. Being on track with your retirement finances and plans is winning this game right now. That is very interesting. We are going to talk about that moving forward a little more deeply here, because I want to hear more about what that means to you. Now, we have come a bit of a way. You know that we still struggle a lot, of course, in the workplace, and there are a lot of gaps here. But 60% of us are in the labor force and more. 40% of us are managerial professional jobs. A lot has changed since a lot of us were kids, so this is great. But we're still lagging behind and falling behind. We retire with 2/3 the wealth of men, and we live 5 to 6 years longer. So if we look at the next slide, you see some of those financial challenges that we have, right? Our life insurance balances are almost 30% lower than that of men, and 44% of women have no life insurance, and most of us are uninsured or underinsured. So we need to change that. There are a couple gaps that we have to take care of, right? So the first one here is the gender pay gap. We know this. This was talked about at lunch. It absolutely exists. Here's another poll question for you. What is the amount? Did they just show the answer? Okay, we just got the answer there. So much for that. But what is the amount that female workers earn on average for every dollar earned by male counterparts? Now, would most of you have suspected it was 79? Right, because it was on the slide, previous slide. But if you are Latina or African American, those numbers are actually much more dismal. You're closer to 63 to 54%. Mm. So it is really, really tough, right? Now, so we can also see Social Security benefits, 27% lower. I could go on and on. I want to talk, we're all professionals here. Renee, I'll throw this to you first. Let's talk a little bit about that gap and what has been your experience with balancing it or closing it, the gender gap?
Nothing like giving me a softball.
I get right in front.
I feel like I'm in a bit of a unique situation in that, I came for a long time, was in traditional media, worked for CBS and some other large media companies, and they're very secretive about salaries. The salaries, you never know what anybody else is making, because I think they don't want you to all gang up together and go in kind of like a favored nations type thing and negotiate that way. So I was really, in terms of a pay gap, I knew I was making less. The question was, how much less? And really, was it less because I was a woman and because I was a black woman, or was it less because I was less experienced, or because, you know, I hadn't spent as much time at the network, those kinds of things. So I think it's difficult for me, particularly in my last job, to kind of tease out what those factors were.
Did you have to do anything in your career to try to close that gap, or did you run up against anything?
I didn't personally. I would express my frustrations to an agent. Ironically, we had the same agent.
No. What? We're finding this out
right now. He would always kind of carry that water. But I think at some point, particularly towards, the media landscape has shifted so much, it's really take it or leave it. So there isn't a lot of room to negotiate these days anymore. It's really, this is what it is.
In that business, yes. Yeah. Joey, what about you?
You know, I come from the radio business, but I started my own company in 2009, I believe. And, obviously when you own your own company, you're I call it the HBIC, but, make your own whatever you want to be. I guess the biggest gender gap that I had was when I was on the air, I would stay and work 8-9 hours, and the guy that I co-hosted was always the lead name, was so-and-so and Joey, and they would do their, it's what we called in radio, do their four and hit the door. So they would do their show, their 4-hour show, and they'd be out the door, and I was the one that was picking up all the dirty work. Made maybe a tenth of what this guy made, or those guys. And I think another issue that I had was the maternity issue. Mm-hmm. I went and had, this was the last of my radio career when I said, that's enough. I went and had a baby, and the day I returned from maternity leave, they eliminated my position on the station. And so I was like, you know, yeah, all right, okay, we'll take a break with that. It's tough.
No, it is tough. I mean, and being in, coming from finance media, being in that, I mean, I got gender stories and make all your hair curl, but I think that the transparency is always an issue. And we have, and a lot of women have, you know, things like Glassdoor or Ladder, like you can see a little bit behind the scenes more now with terms of research, but it's still a difficult thing to reconcile when you're sitting in the room trying to negotiate for yourself and you have to stand on your own and demand it many times to change things. Maddie, what do you see in your work when the women come to you for advice?
You know what I see? I've been an advisor for over 30 years. I started working when I was 15. For anybody who cares. So what I see a lot of is the reason for the gap is it falls in line with what Mrs. Obama was saying at our session. Women feel like they have to know everything before they'll ask for that next step up in pay. And men just don't operate that way. They don't. And a lot of it has to do with our fear of failure. So what a lot of my clients do and why they struggle with having their income increase more rapidly than perhaps their male counterparts is because they're just simply afraid to ask. It's really that simple. And I spend a lot of time not so much talking about the financial plan, but talking about walking into that room with confidence. You've earned the right to ask for either equal pay or something that's similar to a man who's doing the same job that you do. And if you can just get over that head trash, as I like to call it, then a lot more women would be compensated the way they should be.
And I think someone mentioned that Shonda this morning had said something about instead of saying confidence, saying courage, right?
Yes.
Because I think as women, a lot of us have trouble with the word confidence because it does feel masculine. It's usually associated with men.
Correct.
But boy, do we have courage. Oh boy,
do we
have
do.
Tons and tons of courage.
We do.
And I know that one thing that's helped me a lot is even though I'm the oldest of five girls, because I was the oldest, I had an older brother and a dad who they were the ones I butted heads with. And I saw them. And to Mrs. Obama's point, I was just like, well, why are you so special? And I was like, I'm just as special as you. So going into the room for me was more about just that was equality. It was, well, you're not more special than I am. So learning that when we're young and then we can pass it along to our kids,
right,
is probably very, very important. So, you know, you see a lot of lost benefits moving on, right, Maddie?
Like, I do.
When it's not just about the pay gap, what other things kind of fall through the cracks that basically take away from our wealth as we get older?
Okay, so what happens with the pay gap is there's several things that happen. One in particular is every time as women we decide that we're going to sacrifice ourselves for our families, and we not only don't make the same money per dollar, but we take time off. That affects long-term what's in our 401k accounts. It affects what your entitlements will be for Social Security. So a lot of women say, oh, well, I'm just gonna stay home because it costs too much for the babysitter. That may be true, but what you also have to factor in is the loss in those Social Security benefits that you're sacrificing, as well as the inability to contribute to a plan, a retirement plan. So it's okay to take that time off. That's an individual decision for everyone. But when I'm dealing with my clients and when we're talking about developing a strategy, I just want to make sure that as women, we have as much information as possible before that decision is made, because women put everybody before themselves.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Everybody. So it's my job to be an advocate for us, for all of us in this room. And that's the best way that I find that we can come to a decision and make a plan that's doable for women in general.
Now, Maddie, you're talking about 401ks, and you're up on stage with three women who own their own businesses. So we don't do 401ks. We probably do SEPs.
You can do SEP.
We do SEP. But to that point, I know that I said, that's it. I'm never working for anyone again, so that I have control mm-hmm. over my schedule so I can mm-hmm. see my child. Mm-hmm. Joy and Renee, I mean, these are some of the choices we make, but it's very risky, right?
Well, I mean, I wish there was a way I could go through life without taking any risk, but I haven't figured that part out. So everything you do is a risk, and I think it's about the calculation. In my case, you know, I had always been in media, worked for other people, and one day I got called into a meeting that I didn't like set up, and I went in and I got fired. And, you know, I've always just said the word fired because I feel like it happens, you know, and I didn't feel like I needed to keep it a secret. People get fired, especially a lot in television. The issue for me was, at that point, I realized that I started my own business because I didn't want to have anybody else have that much control and that much power over every single thing in my life. And so I started my own business. Whew, that was a whole and that's really hard. So you have to choose your heart. You have to choose your heart, and that's kind of what I was up against. But what I initially started my business because I didn't want to allow anybody else to have that kind of power over me. That power to hire and fire and change and upend my entire life with just like, you're done.
Joey, how did you reconcile that risk, that financial risk too, on your family to have your own business?
Well, for me, you know, it's like TV, radio, it's every industry, but in radio, I got fired twice.
Three times.
Oh, wow.
Show canceled.
They always say if you don't get fired, you never really made it. So
yeah,
I guess we've got a powerhouse in here.
Winning.
I think for me, I never was able to contribute to a 401k when I was in the beginning anyway, because you start out so small in that business that by the time you're ready to walk away, you don't really care what you're walking away from.
I would say in my case, you know, I think everybody needs to learn how to be a shrewd negotiator. I don't care what the industry is. I think you need to be able to understand your worth and to be able to articulate that. It doesn't have to be combative, but you do have to be firm in it. And when I lost my job, the reason I was able to be okay for quite a while was because I had a kind of a soft place to land. And that was because I can remember even just kind of talking about it, my stomach is like, ew, because you have to go right up to the 11th hour, right? Toe to toe. Nothing good happens. Nothing substantive happens before the 11th hour. And then but you have to have guts to get to that 11th hour. And sometimes I think women, we are, we're either playing it safe or we don't want to upset anybody mm-hmm. or something like that. Go ahead and upset them and be happy. And you know what? Buy them a drink when you're done with
Shake
all your
cash. Shake it up.
Exactly. I mean, one of those things about, you know, whoever is willing to walk away from the table is the one with the power.
Absolutely.
And I don't say that from a place of, I mean, when I first got fired from Money Magazine as editor there, I had a new mortgage I was pregnant and it was horrible. And there was like $500 in the bank. And I was like, no, I'm going to work for myself. I'm going to build something. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it was the ability to just be like, oh, you don't want to pay me for this piece or you don't want to pay me for this. I don't do things for free. No one else does things for free. And but that's dangerous, but I was willing to deal with that because I stood strong by the fact what I do has value. And I built that into a business. So I think everybody can do that. It's just there's a lot of fear about stepping away from that table.
Absolutely.
You know, you said you were pregnant when you got fired. Getting fired never happens at an opportune time because I got fired and then 3 weeks later I was on a table at Memorial Sloan Kettering having a double mastectomy, you know, so, and then I went through this whole other thing. It never happens in this quiet sort of, okay, I guess now this is the perfect time for you to be fired. It always happens when everything is, you know, up and everything is a mess, you know.
Fabulous segue. Sad segue, but fabulous segue because you were here with us today, and we're going to talk about the time gap. This is another gap. So this is the second shift effect. So one of the things, and you had mentioned that we do so much. We do so much outside of work, right? So it's called the second shift effect. Even if you're employed full-time, you're a manager, you're an executive, you own your own business, we still do, on average, women, most of the management of the home, right? And the maintenance work, and the childcare, and taking care of aging, sick parents. So, you know, there was a study, which I think you might have, no, maybe not, the Organization of Economic Cooperation and Development in October 2016 showed, on average, women in the U.S. spend 28 hours per week, and these are working women, on the household, 65% more than the average for working men. So I think, Maddie, you had made this point about we do everything, right? So
yeah.
This second shift effect, is that a big mistake when it comes to our money?
It is. It is.
Just want you to say it.
Absolutely.
Can we go quickly before I'm going to come back to you? Because this is very important. Another poll question. Can we flip it? Okay. Do you own a life insurance policy, and what is it worth? A, I do not have life insurance. This is anonymous. We're not going to track you.
Nope,
and track you down later. B, whatever my job benefits provide for me. C, 10 to 25. And D, more than 100,000. Where are we at? Oh. Keep going. Be honest.
Come on.
We're here to help you.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so we're not bad. The 9% of you, we're gonna take care of you later. But here's the thing. Maddie, can you talk a little bit about this aspect, considering as women, we do tend to have more people who depend on us, and we do live longer.
This is something that's a very passionate thing for me to discuss. Whether you are a stay-at-home mom or someone who works outside of the home, the value of what you do should be treasured, not ignored. Mm. Well, I should tweet that. That's a good tweet.
There you go.
Anyway, so this is what I say about that. What we've done at Prudential is we have actually, because what a lot of women say to me is, well, Maddie, what does that cost? What does it cost when I take little Johnny to the soccer game, or what does it cost when I have to take my daughter to the hospital, or what does it cost when I have to wash the dishes and do the laundry and all the other things that we do? And it's very hard for most people to quantify what that looks like. So what we've done at Prudential is we've actually come up with a way to do that. What's the name of that form? I'm sorry. Help me out. The value of all you do is what it's called. And it's a great way to actually get a visual and a number as far as what you do. And it's very important because, again, what I say is just because you're not bringing home the paycheck per se, the value of what you do, if heaven forbid something happened to you and you either passed away or became disabled, is a huge problem for people who don't plan accordingly. So that is typically my advice when I'm sitting down with.
Joey, you hear from so many women, right? And they're really talking real to you. Can you tell us a bit about what you're hearing about this issue?
I can just be honest with myself. It's terrifying.
Oh, do it with yourself. Yeah.
It's terrifying. Because I personally don't have life insurance. It's not ever crossed my mind that I needed it 40 years old or 30 or whatever I was at that moment when I was thinking about it. But a lot of the women that I talk to say things like, because I actually asked part of my community what it was like if they had health insurance or if they had life insurance or how they deal with their money. And many of them said, well, I've never been able to put money on the work that I've done as a mom, so I feel that I'm not worth a life insurance.
Oh. Well, if you were to replace
right.
with other human beings the work that you do as a parent. Oh, let me tell you, I know this was calculated. I can't remember who did it. I'm not supposed to mention studies that aren't up there, but it's easily in the six figures. I know that when we all pay for help with our children or cleaning the house or cooking and all those other things, if you were to add up all of those expenses, you would have to replace that. So it's an absolute value, because if you were to go, what would it take financially for to have someone do all of those things? Mm-hmm. So tell them.
You know.
Tell them. Joy.
I wonder if it's a if it's one of those things where, you know, where you are taking your household expenses, and I don't think this really says, this doesn't speak to us very well as far as where we are and how we value ourselves. But if you have expenses and you're like, well, I'm in good health right now and mm-hmm. nothing bad is going to happen, mm-hmm. and you're just have this sort of that kind of mentality. So I'm going to just put that at the bottom of the list, and I'll get to it someday.
Exactly.
And then someday happens, and then you're left, you know, kind of twisting.
And it's too late, and then it costs a fortune.
Right.
And you are taking care of someone in your family as well, and you have had health issues, so this is very important. You've seen it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not taking care of, that might have been somebody else.
Oh, they put down that you were.
I'm taking care of me.
Good, go for it.
But yeah, you know, and I think I'm at that age now where I'm like a classic car. You know, you still look good, but things are starting to go wrong. And here and there. I'm probably to a point where those kinds of things are a little more real now for me, because, yeah, it just, the old chassis is not working like it used to.
And as moms, we have to, and I'm the one taking care of the sick parent. I thought we shared that. But the question is, who depends on you, right? So if somebody depends on you financially or personally because you care for them, you need to have insurance, even if it's term insurance, because this is what's going to replace you.
Absolutely.
Right? Especially when it comes to aging parents. So let's talk about the longevity gap. We're going to talk about lots of gaps here. So we have the gender gap, the time gap. Let's look at the next poll question. How old is the oldest person you know? 70, 75, 76 to 80, anyone? I'll tell you, mine is 86 to 90. What about you, Leigh? Joey, where?
104.
What?
Wow.
My husband's grandmother. I'm like, they're Armenian and they're all old. I'm like, you guys are, your genes are.
Oh my God.
104.
He's going to have like three working acts in life. Like, he's going to be working until he's 95.
Well, and his mom's mom is 101.
Oh my God.
Okay, you're going to be the one around a lot longer than I am.
Well, so look, look at this high percentage of people that know people over the age of 85. Okay. So when I was a kid, I remember dealing with my dad, and he was all like, you know, oh yeah, you know, everybody retires at 60 or 65. Mm. My God. And now I'm looking at this going, you know, at 46, I'm looking at another, how many years? Who knows how many years? What do we do in terms of planning? Because Maddie, planning for the second half or third half, or third half doesn't make sense. But you know what I mean? If you live to 104, uh-huh. you have three halves. Mm-hmm. How do you plan for that financially?
You make sure that you partner with somebody like yours truly to figure it out. Because I'll tell
there's
you,
there's a sales pitch.
Yes, this
you're
longevity,
gonna get old.
It doesn't have to be me per se, but I'm saying this longevity thing that we're all facing, because of the wonderful advances that there's been in medicine and how we don't smoke as much as we used to and all these other great, and Renee's the picture of fitness, people like her, she'll probably be here till 120, the rate she's going. It's, and I hate to say this, but it's a problem that needs to be addressed. Now, it can be addressed, that's the good news, by implementing strategies so that you will never, ever run out of money. Because what fun is that to finally retire, you've worked all of your life, and now you have to be concerned about how you're going to pay your rent or your mortgage in your 90s. That's not why we do what we do. That's not why we get up and go to work every day. So there are strategies that will prevent that from happening, but the key is to not be afraid, okay? And don't worry about what you have not done. There's nothing we can do about yesterday. Yesterday is gone. But guess what, ladies and gentlemen? We can do something about today and tomorrow. But what happens with a lot of people is they just get so upset and so worried about what they haven't done, they do nothing. And then guess what? A year goes by, 2 years go by, 10 years go by, and it's, oh my God, now what? So the key is to just start somewhere. It's okay, no matter where you are right now, just start doing something. If you need assistance, there's all kinds of stuff on the internet. Google it if you have to. But more importantly, and the right way to do it, is to partner with someone who has the expertise that can help you get where you want to go. And that's by establishing your goals and implementing some type of strategy. And the people that do that, that are clients of mine, again, I've been doing this for over 30 years, are the happiest retirees on the face of this earth. They truly are. So why shouldn't that be everyone in this room?
Joey, I got to get back to this 104. Do you ever, have you seen or been around when your husband's side of the family, you know, when they're talking with her about money at all? What does it look like?
At this point, you know, she's not really, I mean, she's staying at a probably, I don't even know how much, retirement home in Pasadena, California. Mm. So clearly they were able to, but they were immigrants. They moved here from another country. They opened up a rug store, and that, you know, they were able to use that in the 80s. I don't know when that was, but everybody was buying $50,000 rugs. Mm. They don't do that anymore. So the money that they had then is just nowhere near where it is now. I guess asking my father-in-law's is a better question than yeah. Really, it's definitely different for them, because to him, he hasn't made money in 10 years because yeah. of the rug business. But yeah, it's interesting.
It's difficult as you get older. Renee, we're talking about health is part of the longevity. That's health, that's part of it. My mother passed away of colon cancer at 59 and left behind just more debt than you can, you know, imagine, because she wouldn't talk to us about money. She wouldn't talk to me, the money person. She wouldn't talk to me about money. Yeah. So it was a lot of pride, and a lot of immigrant pride, and a lot of this is just none of your business. But illness can come at any time. It can hit you. It can put you in a tough spot. And then your future, you've been there. You've seen it. How do you plan for that?
Well, I think a big part of what has to happen is you have to plan for every conceivable possibility and situation, even the ones that you don't want to talk about, the ones that are too painful to, you know, I didn't think I'd be having my breasts removed at you know, 45 or 46. And I look back on it now that I don't have kind of a great insurance policy, and I thank God that back then I had a great insurance policy, because these are $30,000, you know, and the whole surgery and all of that, and it was a lot. But having to deal with that emotionally and all of that other stuff, I was able to do because I didn't have to worry about the financial piece. So financial issues, you know, though sometimes hard to talk about, it bring great peace of mind, and therefore those things have to be out in the open and talked about.
Can I just jump in here for 1 second? Here's the other thing I want everybody in this room to think about. Your financial peace of mind has as much to do with your physical health than the vitamin that you take or don't take every day.
Absolutely.
And I say that with all sincerity, because you can physically make yourself sick worrying about whether or not you're going to have enough money. Mm-hmm. So if for no other reason than that, let that be your inspiration to start to change your plan if you don't have one. If it's not because of the money, just because of your own physical well-being, please, please, please. Because when I tell you this, if I sit down with a couple or a business owner or someone who's an entrepreneur and the worry that's on their faces when they walk into my office and it's and they're squirming around in the chair and looking out the window because they're nervous. They're in my office, they're like, oh my God, I have a problem, I have to see an advisor. But when we start to peel back that onion and we start to talk about, if you didn't have money, how would you, how do you want to retire? Do you want to live in Boca? Do you want to travel? Do you want, and we just start dreaming out loud about what it is that we want. Because once I know that and I know geographically where you want to live, now we could start to put some numbers behind it. And when I tell you, when they come back a month, 2 weeks later, whatever it takes, and I put that plan in front of them, we sit there and we discuss it, all of the worry, the shoulders drop, a physical, now I can breathe. Why? Because all of that stress is gone. There's no reason why anybody in this room can't have that same ecstasy. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to jump in, but I
no,
that's
but
very
I mean,
important.
I get it. Like, yeah. It, when once you have a path forward and you have a roadmap, mm-hmm. then you have a way to go. So
absolutely.
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 And segue, Fat Brunet. So good. This brings us to a big part of planning for the future and putting things basically into place so you don't have to worry is investing, right? So let's look at this next slide. We're going to talk about the investment and debt gap quickly. What investment vehicle are you using most often for your finances today? Savings account, money market, 401k, other savings, mutual funds, or none of the above? Investment vehicle. Note the wording. This is a trick question, giving you a heads up. Okay.
All right.
Okay.
I'm liking it.
I you know, the financial professional's happy. This is looking good. So you're utilizing these retirement accounts. Now, here's the thing. There's, you know, we know and we see that women do not invest actively as much as men, right? This is known in general. But did you also know, and I know this study's not up there, but this is Harvard 2006, and it's been studied also at University of California, that in terms of behavioral economics, women are so much better investors than men because of our own traits and our tendencies to not jump into things, to do our research, to sell and buy less, meaning to not actively trade. So we average about 1 to 2% more, which you think is not a big deal, but as Maddie knows, that
is
huge.
Over time, it's a very big deal.
They pay hedge funds to get 1 to 2% more. So it's very important. But Joey, let's talk about why do you think women are not as engaged with investing? What's going on?
I'm learning a lot today. You know, and I can really only share my experience is I didn't, and I still don't, hence why I'm here, know where to put the money in the right place. I mean, growing up, my dad worked to put shoes on his daughters, and my mom worked, so we had health insurance. The thought of going to a mall and buying something was just not even part of our possibilities. I marry a man whose family is the smartest money people I've ever met in my life, and I learned a lot, but I also learned a lot of the things that I wish I would have learned as a kid that I could have shared with my family, which now I share with them, but they're, you know, obviously at a different stage in their lives. It's an interesting thought of where to really place it and take it. You don't have to have a ton to be able to put it somewhere.
Yeah, and to have the motivation to do it, mm-hmm. right? Brene, what about you? What do you feel that there was something that prevented you from looking at your finances?
Yeah, I talked about it in the panel I was doing earlier. I took pre-algebra 3 times in high school, and I checked out of math in the 6th grade. That is not even a joke. When long division came, I just was like, I can't do this, I'm done. And they were not encouraging women back then, or girls, to really pursue that. So I was able to drop out, and as a result, I have a thing about money, math, all of it. It makes me uneasy. It makes me uncomfortable. I don't like to really talk about it. I don't know why I'm up here talking about it. I'm stressed out. But all of those things, I have a very uneasy relationship with money. And so that's primarily why I would like, and my husband is so much better at it. So I really would just abdicate all of that to him. I know that's not what I need to be doing.
No, ma'am.
But I just, Maddie, I don't have time to take algebra again. So, and I don't have.
Well, but you dropped on that point. You touched on the point that it wasn't encouraged, right? It wasn't encouraged. So, how much of it is really about us as females, and how much of it is because this is what we're told we're good at or we're not good at? Because it was in my family. Because again, I had this like dad older brother thing. It had nothing to do with math. Yeah. It actually was, this is just what you do when you're a grown-up. You pay your bills and all you have to do is add and subtract and maybe multiply.
Right.
So it didn't seem like this big math thing, but I think that was some of the biggest advantage that I had, was just that there was no male-female. It was like, well, this is what you do when you're a grown-up.
I will say I'm getting better at it. And it's sad, though, that at almost 55, I'm now like reconciling my relationship with money.
It's okay. It's
never too late.
When it's coming, I can at least balance a checkbook without breaking out into a cold sweat.
Good. And why are you balancing a checkbook? You need software. You need software, man.
Software?
You shouldn't have to do that.
That's why. That's why I'm not.
Baby steps. Baby steps, Renee. We will do baby steps. But we'll get you there. I mean, that's a big part of it, and thinking that we're not good at something. But Maddie, a lot of it is to do, right, with like just putting systems into place. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Talk a little bit about what am I saying here?
There's this B word that I use.
Which one?
No, not that one.
What word?
Not that one.
What was the word? What was the letter?
It's called budget.
Oh.
Okay.
The B word.
Ooh. And a lot of people don't like to use that word, but here's what even a baby budget does for you, a BB.
A baby budget.
A baby budget.
I love that so much.
What it does
trademark
is
that's an app.
Okay. Write that down, Renee.
Write that, baby budget.
That gives you a visual. Because how many times do you get paid? And I'm guilty, even though I'm in the business. And then you look at your statement, you go, What did I just spend all this money on? Has that happened to anybody in this room, or is it just me? Anybody? Okay, all right. So when you have a BB, a baby budget, and that's how we should all start, it gives you a visual for where your money is going. Yeah. Just like any other habit, it doesn't happen overnight. Okay, it takes some time, usually about 3 months or so before it becomes practice. But what it does is it gives you a realization as to where and what you're spending your money on. Because that's the foundation of any financial plan. We make money, we spend money. So the question and the problem that most people have in the beginning is, where is my money going? And some people don't want to face that reality because they don't want to know where the money's going. Because they want to keep buying those red bottom shoes and this, that, and the other thing. And that's fine.
Mine were on serious sale.
So are mine.
And they are 10 years old.
On sale.
In fact, the bottoms aren't even red anymore.
So. Renee.
On sale.
So that's the key, in my opinion, as to how to get started.
I find actually in my, and I do have a baby budget. It's like an infant budget.
Okay.
But I find that there's really power operating within that,
in
those parameters. Absolutely. I want to be reined in and working
Most
within,
people do.
Right. It feels good.
Yeah.
It feels good to say, that's not in my budget right now.
Right.
It really does.
Yeah. You have a sense of control.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel so good when your husband says, that's not in your budget right now.
But,
Yeah, no. You just gave me our budget right now.
But
you're right. The trips to Saks probably wasn't the smartest thing. But I'm going to BJ's. I'm not buying a handbag.
But,
you know?
Joey, you should have your own account. Where you can buy the Saks things if you wanted to, so that your budget is yours. There's that.
Well, it's there,
Joey.
Trust me. I wasn't going to say it.
I'm just saying. I hope you do. That's part of the autonomy, right? So you just have your own or have some budget. But those parameters can feel really good. And Maddie, before we're going to want to have some Q&A here, but having those parameters when it comes to investing. So, for example, signing up for and investing automatically for the money to come out of your account before it hits.
That's easy.
Those kind of systems that you put into place, are these parameters, right?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Talk a little bit about that.
And there's really nothing wrong with that. I mean, what it does for me and what it does for my clients is it actually empowers you. Yeah. It really does, because you don't have to wonder. You know what your discretionary income is. You know what you can spend. And it also allows you to plan for those things that you really want. That vacation, that car, whatever, you know? And it allows you to plan for it without having to go out and get a loan or a credit card at 22%. That's very empowering. Now, is it easy? No, it's just like working out the day after New Year's, right? You do it for a week and you're all gung-ho. If you don't push through, then guess what? You're gonna see the same number on the scale or even more. A budget is the same thing, but once you get through that first couple of months of working out, well, wow, now you're golden, because now you've developed a habit. And habits are good. They really are.
And it's seen as like taking care of finances seems like a chore, and it seems...
It's not.
It seems dry,
yeah,
and it seems like this and that. But it's actually a way for us to balance all of those demands, for example, whether it's aging parents or whatever it is, our children, all of these things, to put things on some kind of autopilot, right?
Absolutely.
So that we know, and it develops into this habit where you have a running, like I do, running tab in my head all times. You can see my wheels going. I could tell you the balance on all of my accounts, right? I'm not the normal person. So I want to open it up for questions from everybody here to our panelists.
You know what, can
minutes.
I just,
go over it.
If there's no questions, I just want to say, I also think possibly that it's our nature that we don't like to be told no.
Yeah.
So when you want your red bottom shoes or you want your vacation, or you want whatever, to have to work towards something means you have to plan it, you have to actually, you know, it's work. It's
goals.
Work. Working,
mm-hmm.
You have to set goals, you have to meet goals. And I think that as humans, and you know, we just are like, but I want it. We're all toddlers, you know, when it comes to stuff like that, and many of us are. Well, okay, me. and you just want it. You want it when you want it, and you don't want to have to wait 2 weeks from now. You don't want to put it on layaway. You want to put it on a credit card,
yeah.
Even though it's going to cost you another whatever. And I had my own shift in that when I started paying cash for everything, and all of a sudden it was like, oh. I can't buy that because I don't have the cash for that.
Yeah.
And that's also kind of an interesting shift too. Like you don't spend more than you have.
And that's a good mental way of putting those boundaries. Joey, talking about what you want, you know, social media and this constant kind of noise we hear on us about how we need to have the right things for our kids or have the right things for ourselves. You must hear that with a lot of moms, right?
Oh yeah.
And yourself. So how does everybody deal with that?
From what I can gather, really, is because again, a lot of moms don't want to talk about. We all talk about what we want, and we know what we need, but yet we don't talk about what we go and get and put in the trunk until we're like, "Ooh, girl, like shoes. Oh, you have no idea where I got those." But I think a lot of times the moms that are in, you know, the Reality Moms community they're focused on the real side of what their money problems are. Whether it's having the money to buy something or not having it because they want it to give to their kids.
And how do you deal with the pressure of it?
That's a really good question.
Or how do you recommend people deal with that pressure?
I tell them to call Prudential.
Oh my God. Hashtag
that was
ad.
A hopeless plug.
Hashtag it. Right, or also you can just remind yourself that your friends aren't paying your bills and they won't pay your
yes.
bills, so you gotta pay your bills.
Yeah, you're not parenting for their kids.
Exactly.
You know what, the key is to work with someone. It really is. Everybody's so busy. We don't have time for this. We don't. So you need to work with someone that will hold you accountable. Because life gets in the way, and the money thing gets pushed to the back. It always gets. But if you have someone that's constantly saying, you know what, we need to look at this. We need to see how your accounts are doing. Then it's a reminder, just like you when you get that note from the dentist every 6 months that you have to go get your teeth cleaned. Mm-hmm. Without it, a lot of us probably wouldn't go.
Yeah.
So there's power in saying, it's okay for me to ask for help. Just like with anything else. And that's what I think we should do.
And don't you think a lot of people think, well, I don't have enough money.
Oh, gosh, I'm so glad you said that.
To use a financial professional.
Yes,
but
yes.
That's not necessarily the case.
Actually, it's quite the opposite.
Yeah.
The people that don't have a lot of money are the ones that need to work with an advisor.
Oh.
so that what they do have can grow in the best way possible. Think about that for a second.
That makes sense.
Okay? Because you what you have is limited. So it needs to be growing, and it needs to be appropriated in a very tax-efficient way, so that when the time comes that you want to slow down or you want to explore a second career, there'll be enough money for you to do that, more so than anyone else. So it's just that, I'm glad you brought that up, because that is, or they say, how much is it going to cost?
Yeah.
Well, to come into anyone's office, I think we have some financial professionals in the back of the room, it's not going to cost you anything. So what's the harm? You don't even have to pay for the consultation. Just sit down with someone, tell them where you are, and ask them if they can give you advice as to how to make it better. I mean, there's no excuse not to. There really isn't.
Anyway, we have a question.
Hi, how are you?
Hi.
Can you hear me? I'm kind of loud.
Yes.
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 So I have two life insurances. One I have just for my daughter. The other one I have for my mortgage and my funeral expenses, if anything happens. Should I roll them together or keep them separate?
How long have you had them?
I had when I turned 30, and then I came to my senses at 40 and got the bigger one for my daughter so that she would be okay, so she could maintain, her father could maintain her standard of living.
Right, right. As far as putting them together, the way I typically work with people is I evaluate everything that you have, not just the life insurance, because I don't like recommending replacing anything until I have a full-blown picture, okay? So if you want to have a conversation, we can talk offline. But I'm so happy to hear that you have insurance. Yes. Kudos to you, my friend. Kudos.
She's come more than
you get a gold star.
And you don't have to go up to the mic if you want to ask a question. Go ahead.
My husband and I both have retirement accounts. He's going to retire probably next year. I'm 3 years away from retirement. I had the ability to put it in a post-tax retirement through work. I'm really nervous about once you retire, like you look at your portfolio and you go, yeah, I have all this money. But then you have to extract the taxes that you're going to be responsible for. And I think a lot of people lose sight of that.
They do.
So would I be better, my husband and I, would we be better served in saving all of my, I always maximize it. Should I then shift to after tax those last 3 years?
Well, there are certain income restraints, so I don't know where you are as far as your income is concerned.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can't just do that.
It's not a blanket anybody can, it's called a Roth strategy.
Okay, so that's strictly the Roth, okay.
Correct.
When I saw it said that the pre and post, I thought, oh, okay, I can save as much as I want up to, you know, whatever the limit is.
Yeah, there are certain restrictions. Okay. It's not a bad strategy, though. It's really not. Because does anybody in this room think income taxes are going down, ever?
No.
Anybody? No? Come on, somebody be brave. Raise your hand. So there's two ways.
More like 30. Yeah.
It all depends on your tax bracket, first of all, where you are, your tax bracket. Yeah, and that would get charged to you as earned income at the end of the year. But the beauty of it is when you turn 70 and a half, you would not have to take what we call required minimum distributions because it's already been taxed by the government.
So they tell you how much you can take, when you can take it?
If it's pre-tax money, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes.
It follows in those rules because of the tax favored status of it. So that's why it has those kinds of rules.
If you can, I don't say do all of it in a Roth, because sometimes that's a healthy tax bomb that you don't need. But I would...
Because you know what the taxes are if you do a Roth.
Yes, that is true. That is true.
Later down the line, you see all these deficits coming up and up and up.
Most of my clients have both in their strategy. They have traditional and Roths in their strategy.
Another question.
Okay.
You may or may
not.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
And then we got to address debt. We haven't even talked about debt at all, which is very crazy. Okay. You sure? I do want to talk about how can we do this without talking about debt? That's totally weird. Because that is a big issue, right? And especially as parents. Does anyone have a specific question about debt? Any kind of debt?
Debt is bad.
Well, but see, in my career, I've always been like, yeah, nope. It's neither bad nor good. It's a tool, right? It's a tool. So I've utilized debt. I wouldn't be sitting here if I didn't use, as I call, other people's money. OPM is one of my favorite things because it's what given me the freedom to get an education, live on my own, get the suit so I could get the job I want, like all of these things. Mm-hmm. It's about managing it the right way. I saw an arm go up. Yes.
Well, think about what you can write off and what you can't. So there's not too many exceptions left in the U.S. tax code, unfortunately, right? So if I'm sitting down with someone and they have a mortgage and they have, I don't know, $10,000 in credit card debt, I'm telling them to take care of the credit card debt because it doesn't serve a purpose, right? And absolutely start with the ones with the highest interest first. And just work your way down, you know, because people get overwhelmed and then they say, oh my God, which one? Usually start with the high, or you can start with the lowest balance just so you feel good about yourself that you paid something off, depending on how many cards you have. But it's better to, not always, in your case, it worked for you, but in most people's cases, it doesn't work for them.
I finished paying off my student loans at 42 because they were at below 5% interest rate. Mm-hmm. So I was in no rush. I paid the minimum forever.
Yeah.
And instead I borrowed more money and got a mortgage and then made percentage on the house and made percentage. So it's just, but you got to be super, super savvy and on it.
Correct.
About that. It doesn't fit all people.
Just real quick, what you're saying also go towards business owners? Would you say pay off like a credit card first as a business owner whenever you're dealing with business?
Well, business owners are a little different.
Is it?
Because sometimes they're supplementing their business with that debt. Right.
Yeah.
So that structure is a little bit different depending on the business owner and the business.
Separate the business finances from the personal finances.
Yes, absolutely.
Please do.
Absolutely.
Okay, we have time for one more question.
Oh, we have two
okay,
more.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead. Mm-hmm. So I actually reduced my 401k, what I was putting into that, to put into the health savings account. What's your thoughts on that?
Oh, God.
This is my pet peeve.
Oh, yeah, she's like, ow.
This is my pet peeve.
I know exactly.
Here's my thoughts. Depending on the health of you and your family. So if you do not have someone in your household who needs chronic care meds, and I don't know if you do or you don't, so I'm just going to ask you, do you have someone that, okay, why are you paying such a high deductible then?
For a high deductible?
Yes.
Just so that I can put into the health savings account. So the actual cost differential wasn't that much at my work. Versus a regular traditional plan.
Right.
And I didn't want to, as she was talking about earlier with the 401k, I didn't want to put all my money into a 401k where I'm going to have to pay taxes on it later. So I was thinking using the health savings account that I would be able to use that later in life to pay for health things and have it totally tax-free.
That's fine, but the 401k is growing on a tax-deferred basis.
Right.
And in most cases, it's getting matched. Okay.
So
then you're fine. Yeah, then you're fine.
Do up to the full amount that I can,
Do up to the full amount.
Okay.
It may not seem like a lot now, but trust me.
So she should jigger this so that she's paying less into the health savings account and more into the 401k?
Here's the thing. What a lot of people do is they choose the highest deductible because when they go to the doctor, they pay less. Which is fine in some cases. So if you have someone, like my husband has type 2 diabetes. Mm-hmm. So he has certain meds that he has to purchase every month. So that's why I chose to go the route that you went to. But what a lot of people do is they automatically, same thing with car insurance, they go for the deductible that's going to cost them more on a monthly basis or a semi, however you pay your insurance. Instead of putting all that money into a plan, because you don't get it back, right, at the end of the year. If you're in a situation where your family doesn't require a whole lot of extra medical care, why not take that money and reposition it somewhere else? And most people don't think about that. So they're spending dollars needlessly.
I may have said that the wrong way.
Okay. Then you're fine.
Yeah. Always.
That's perfect.
I don't go to the doctor that often. Currently.
Okay. Right. So until that changes, I would keep my strategy the way it is. Kudos to you. Perfect. You get an A+.
Yay! We're gonna end on that A+. Thank you so much, Joey, Renee, Maddie. Thank you so much for joining us today, and all of you. Thank you so much for being here.
I would like to say one thing before we break.
Go.
We need more women in this industry.
Oh, yes. Oh, my God. It's important.
Oh, my God. I need help. We all need help. There's not enough female advisors in this country. And here's the fallacy. People think that in order to do what I do on a daily basis, you have to have a degree in finance or math or business. Nothing can be further than the truth. Nothing. What you have to be is an individual who wants to help others. An individual who likes to listen, someone who's empathetic. Who does that sound like? Who does that sound like?
There you go.
Someone who's willing to help others solve their problems.
Women.
That's us. So if any of you want to just explore a career as a financial professional, please see me after the session, even if it's not under my umbrella, if it's somewhere else, because the need for women is growing every day. We control 60% of the wealth in this country. And we control it, but we don't know how to invest it. We don't know what to do with it because we don't feel comfortable talking to some people who aren't as empathetic as we are, if you get my drift, okay? We want to talk to someone who looks like us and sounds like us. And it's not going to come at us with a whole bunch of financial mumbo jumbo.
And I would like to go to conferences, and I would love to go to conferences or places where I speak at big conferences on finance and not see a room full of men in suits.
Ugh.
Really. Yeah. I shouldn't be the only woman in the stage or the only woman here. We need more financial professionals,
and
for
that's,
sure.
And that's happening.
And talk about job security. Oh my gosh.
You'll never not have clients, I'll tell you that much.
Great.
You'll be as busy as you can be. Trust me.
So you will be mobbed later. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for coming.